What if I told you that one of the world's most complex nations, home to over 200 ethnic groups and 500 languages, was never meant to exist at all? Nigeria's story begins not with colonial mapmakers in 1914, but thousands of years earlier, when sophisticated civilizations flourished across West Africa's forests and savannas. Archaeological evidence reveals continuous human habitation dating back to 9000 BCE, with communities developing pottery, agriculture, and eventually powerful kingdoms that rivaled any in medieval Europe. The Yoruba spiritual center of Ile Ife produced bronze sculptures so exquisite they still astonish art historians today. The Kingdom of Benin built an empire through tribute and trade, its artisan guilds creating masterpieces that would later fill European museums. Meanwhile, the Kanem Empire in the northeast established trans-Saharan trade routes that connected West Africa to the Mediterranean world. These weren't primitive societies waiting for European civilization. They were dynamic, self-governing states with their own systems of law, commerce, and cultural expression. Between 1500 and 1800, European coastal trade fundamentally transformed West African societies. Slavery existed in Nigeria before Europeans arrived, but operated more like temporary servitude than hereditary chattel slavery. The transatlantic trade changed everything. Under Mai Idris Aloma in the late 1500s, Borno expanded militarily, selling war captives across the Sahara to fund purchases of horses and firearms, creating a devastating cycle where military superiority generated more captives and more trade. In the Bight of Biafra, the Arochakwu Oracle became a direct source of slaves, demanding them as payment or judicial penalties. The Aro traders manipulated the oracle for profit, yet surrounding communities feared it enough to comply. By 1800, slavery had become integral to regional economies, with two major European trading centers, the Bight of Benin and Bight of Biafra, making slaves the primary commodity. This dependency would fuel the revolutionary upheavals of the 19th century. The 19th century brought seismic changes to Nigeria. In the north, Usman Danforio's Islamic Jihad unified all Hausa states under the Sokoto Caliphate, creating one of Africa's largest empires. Though the revolution failed some ideals, practices Danforio condemned, like certain taxes and Muslim enslavement, continued under Fulani rule. The caliphate enabled former rivals to trade freely and spread Islamic education throughout the region. In the south, Oyo's collapse in the 1830s triggered decades of Yoruba warfare. Refugees fleeing south founded cities like Ibadan and Abeokuta, which grew into major urban centers. These wars ended only with British negotiation in 1886, setting the stage for colonial rule. Meanwhile, Britain's 1807 abolition of the slave trade pushed a gradual shift toward legitimate commerce, primarily palm oil. Yet this transition was incomplete. The slave trade persisted into the 1850s, and slavery actually expanded because palm oil production required intensive labor. Still, increased market access allowed small-scale producers, including women and slaves, to trade independently. British colonization of Nigeria relied on violence and deception. Some rulers signed protection treaties, hoping for military support. Others, like Jaja of Opobo, signed reluctantly to avoid conflict. Britain established control through superior firepower. Lagos was annexed in 1861, followed by gradual inland expansion. The Royal Niger Company, chartered in 1886, used administrative powers to secure treaties and exclude rivals. When High Commissioner Frederick Lugard approached the Sokoto Caliphate in 1899, the Caliphate refused to accept a British resident. Lugard concluded military conquest was necessary. The Caliphate's decentralized structure, lacking a standing army, meant emirates fought largely alone. By 1903, Lugard had conquered Kano and Sokoto. Colonial rule introduced indirect rule, using traditional kings and chiefs to control local areas. This system often failed spectacularly. In southeastern Nigeria, British officers struggled to identify traditional rulers among the Igbo, whose democratic village councils lacked paramount chiefs. The British appointed warrant chiefs with no traditional authority, creating resentment that fueled future resistance. Colonial economic policy aimed to modernize Nigeria, but primarily enriched British interests by expanding raw material exports, introducing UK currency, and forcing Nigerians into wage labor. This created dependence on European-dominated trade. Groundnut exports exploded from 475 tons annually in the early 1900s to over 109,000 tons by the late 1920s. Railways transformed commerce. When rail reached Kano in 1911, groundnut exports jumped from 1,179 to 19,288 tons in 1 year. These changes triggered massive urbanization as people migrated for work. Lagos grew from 42,000 residents in 1901 to 126,000 by 1931. European education created a Nigerian middle class with hybrid identities who, despite their privileges, faced systematic racial discrimination. They responded by forging unique identities, blending traditional and modern elements, wearing both traditional and European clothing, promoting indigenous languages alongside English, and developing African histories. An independent Nigerian press became their primary resistance tool, with over 50 newspapers appearing between 1880 and 1937. Nigeria gained independence on October 1, 1960, as the giant of Africa. But within a decade, political corruption and military coups triggered a civil war that killed 1 to 3 million people. The core challenge was the national question: how to forge national identity in a country artificially created by British colonialism. The 1950s constitutions undermined unity by granting regional control to the three largest ethnic groups, Hausa Fulani, Yoruba, and Igbo, while alienating minorities. By 1963, southern parties manipulated census figures to weaken northern dominance. The 1964 elections descended into violence. On January 15, 1966, predominantly Igbo officers launched Nigeria's first coup, killing Prime Minister Balewa and regional premiers. Major General Aguyi Iransi seized power, but his May 1966 decree abolishing federalism intensified northern suspicions. Northern officers executed a counter-coup on July 29, killing Iransi. After negotiations collapsed, Colonel Ojukwu declared the Independent Republic of Biafra on May 30, 1967. The civil war lasted 2.5 years, ending with Biafra's surrender on January 12, 1970, a conflict claiming millions, mostly through starvation. Nigeria's post-war years revealed a cruel paradox. Vast oil wealth brought economic boom, but political instability. Petroleum revenue surged from 166 million naira in 1970 to 5.3 billion by 1976, eventually representing 82% of government income. When oil prices declined in the early 1980s, the economy contracted by 8.5%. The petroleum boom decreased diversification. Agricultural output declined, and Nigeria began importing previously exported products. Resource dependence transformed Nigeria into a state funded by external revenues rather than domestic taxation, reducing accountability and enabling mismanagement. Military coups became routine: Buhari in 1983, Babangida in 1985, Abacha in 1993. Babangida's 1986 structural adjustment program collapsed the naira from 1 naira per dollar to 22 by 1994, while per capita income plummeted from $778 to $105. When businessman MKO Abiola won the June 1993 presidential election with 58% of votes, Babangida annulled the results, triggering unprecedented protests. General Abacha's brutal regime imprisoned Abiola and executed environmental activist Ken Sarawiwa in 1995. After Abacha's death in 1998, Nigeria returned to civilian rule, with Olusegun Obasanjo winning the 1999 election, a fragile democracy still learning to walk.